on that moment when I was on the stage and I was pitching, the headline for my pitch was Broken Phones Make Girls Cry.
You're listening to Season 2 of Not Another Business Show with your host, Tracy Sheen.
For me, it all started back in 2010. I was a senior at university and I needed to write my senior paper. So it was my senior year. I'm writing senior paper and my professor gave us the opportunity to start our own business and try to turn a profit in just 3 months, which is insane. Come up with an idea, build a product and make it profitable in just 3 months. But when he told us that the paper we had to write would be half the size if we went the entrepreneurial route, I said, heck yeah, I'll do it. We'll figure out a way. Who cares if I'm profitable or not, right? To start, like, get this, we had to pitch to a panel of local investors. And these were real investors. So think just like Shark Tank, but at a school with students pitching. And it was usually small amounts of money because what are you going to do in 3 months, right? It needs to be quickly something you can purchase and turn a profit on. And it was probably the most pivotal moment for me because I never thought of myself as an entrepreneur. And I chose to go that route out of laziness. But on that moment, when I was on the stage and I was pitching, and the headline for my pitch was Broken Phones Make Girls Cry, so you can understand what industry I was in. And they said they wanted to give me double what I was asking for as far as investment. And this moment, this energy in this room when investors instantly wanted to fund my idea, I think was what kicked it all off for me and made me realize, wow, like I can be an entrepreneur too, and maybe I have what it takes.
Anyone who is a business owner and the story of how they got to where they are today seems to be filled with twists and turns and unexpected deviations. Buckminster Fuller would describe all of these bumps in the road and unexpected learnings as the critical path. So episode 6 of season 2, I'm asking my guests to share their journey as entrepreneurs. How did they get their start? What deviations have they made along the way? What have they learned? And where, for now, have they ended up? At the top of the show, you heard from Josh Muccio, host of the podcast The Pitch, sharing how his journey kicked off while still at uni. So I wanted to know how the mobile repair business went.
It went really well. I learned a few things from it. It's really hard to turn a profit and be a lean business in 3 months, right? But we fixed phones and I had to buy a broken phone off of eBay to learn to fix it. And I learned that I was the worst repair technician at that time. And, you know, once that became a full-time business after school, I quickly hired people to do better than that. But at that time, I had a bunch of inventory of refurbished phones and they released a new iPhone and the value of those phones that I had dropped dramatically. And so it killed a lot of the profits that I had. But as a percentage, we still had 30% gross margin.
Like so many of us, the first foray into business fueled Josh's passion to control his own destiny. Since uni, he has had a few other roles, including starting a sales and marketing consultancy business, which he still operates, but it was how he came to start the Pitch podcast that I was keen to know.
To say I fell into it is kind of true. As with most of my entrepreneurial endeavors, I start out trying to do one thing, and then I realized that it's actually something else similar but very different that I want to do. And in this case, the pitching opportunity came because of somebody who reached out to me because of the Daily Hunt. And they said, hey, I've been, you know, I had this moment where I was watching Shark Tank and I thought, man, would it be cool to invest in these companies? But you can't. And so then he thought, well, maybe I can do a podcast. So he reached out to me when he saw that my first podcast, The Daily Hunt, and we chatted and said, well, yeah, let's, if we can do a podcast where people come on and pitch. The idea has kind of morphed and changed. I mean, there, at one point, like, he was kind of dead in the water. We had a couple startups say no to us to coming on and pitching. And then I had a conversation with Harry Stebbings. If you've heard of the 20-Minute VC.
Okay, so at this point, I should probably clue a few of you in that don't know who Harry Stebbings is. Harry is the founder and host of the 20-Minute VC, a podcast that interviews today's most successful and inspiring venture capitalists looking at the funding business from the inside. If you are at all interested in VC funding or business investment, it's definitely a show worth checking out, and I'll link out to it in the show notes. But back to Josh.
So Harry wants to chat with me because he's got all these investors that they're always looking for better deal flow. They're looking for new startups. They've got more money than they have startups to spend it on. And obviously the key thing there is they need quality startups, not just any startup. But so he starts pitching me on the idea of starting a podcast called The Pitch. And little does he know that I've been working on this idea and we're kind of dead in the water. And it was like that was like the spark that just made me go, okay, like we're doing this thing. And that, from that point on, I talked to everybody about it. And we just, you know, kept going till we found a startup who would come on.
A classic tale of start, stop, think the project has hit a wall, speak to someone who unlocks a potential, and then boom, it's game on. The next guest I spoke to is known for a few different reasons. Author of The 7-Day Startup, founder of WP Curve, and his latest project, Black Hops Brewery, Dan Norris has had an interesting journey as an entrepreneur.
I tried entrepreneurship in 2006 was when I first left my job, and I told people that I'd be a millionaire before I was 30, and because I'd sort of seen all these entrepreneurs making all this money and I thought it was going to be easy.
I had to chuckle to myself when he said that. When I started my first business, I thought it was hang the sign up and sit back to wait for the cash to come rolling in too.
I ran a web agency. I mean, you wouldn't even call it a web agency. It was really just me trying to figure out first how to build people's websites and then second, how to do it for a profit. I was able to figure out the first part of it, but I wasn't really able to figure out the second part of it no matter what I tried. So I did that for about 7 years and just couldn't figure it out. Tried absolutely everything I could do to fix that agency. Just couldn't make any money doing it. And just it just never felt right. Like I always sort of felt like I was an entrepreneur, but there was just something wrong with that business. And I think when it's your first business, it's like you probably think, actually, I'm just a bad business person, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's just the business is wrong and the fit is wrong between you and the business. And that was the case for me. Now I don't think I'm a good or a bad business person, but I think anyone can be a bad entrepreneur or a good entrepreneur depending on the circumstances. And in that circumstance, I just couldn't figure out the agency. It was too competitive. I mean, I didn't want to do what agency people had to do, and I wasn't good at that. So it just didn't really work. I couldn't build a team. It wasn't profitable. So I ended up giving up on it, selling the business and giving myself a year of runway to build something else. I took 50 of those 52 weeks to work on a software app for analytics. And with 2 weeks to go, I realized that wasn't going to work because I was losing $1,500 a month and didn't have any customers. Well, I had 10 customers. And then that was when I launched WP Curve, which is a subscription service for WordPress developers. So you pay $70 a month and you get unlimited small 30-minute WordPress developer fixes for your website. It escalated pretty quickly. I got 10 customers in the first week and about 10 every week for the next 2 years. And it's now a reasonable sized business. We've got 40 people around the world and we're doing about $100,000 Australian a month.
Going from a web agency to WP Curve seems like he took a few turns in the road. I had to dig a little further to find out what happened during the year he took off that helped him come up with the concept that turned into WP Curve.
I was coming at it from a few different points of view. One was that I didn't want to go back and get a job, so I had to start some sort of business. I had to do it quickly because I only had 2 weeks. So doing it quickly ruled out any kind of software business. Any kind of membership wouldn't have happened because it just wouldn't have happened quick enough. I also had to look at what I was known for, like what was a problem that the people in my audience had as opposed to just dreaming up some amazing invention. I mean, physical products weren't possible because it would have taken too long. So I really was limited in terms of my options. Fixing websites was a good fit because that's what I'd done for the last 7 years. But the other angle I was coming to it from was I wanted to build a scalable business, something that was going to have worldwide impact, not a small local agency like I had before. That was the biggest part of it for me. It was like I could have gone back and done projects, and I still turned down projects and have done for the last 2 years, you know, every week. I couldn't build a business doing that. I couldn't build a business the size that I wanted with the impact that I wanted and that enabled me to work as little as I wanted and that enabled me to work on the things I loved doing as much as I wanted. So I needed to think about what was the core problem that I solve when I help people with their website and how do I do that in a way that is profitable and scalable so I could build a proper business around it, not just one that relies 100% on my time.
It's amazing what a motivator not wanting to go back and work for someone else can really be the driver behind fueling your success. I still wanted to understand more from Dan though. WP Curve is a 24/7 business, has been since he started it. That in itself must have been a journey to figure out all of the moving pieces that go on in the background.
Well, I started a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week business, so I needed someone on the other side of the world. Whether I employed them or not would come down to whether or not I could find someone that I could afford. I also felt like I needed someone at that point as sort of just to go in together on something. And I also had just analysed other successful startups and just tried to look at what they do, what are the kind of rules that are accepted in that space. And I like to look at different places for inspiration. So like if you look in the blogging crowd or like the solo business crowd, everyone just does everything by themselves and it's just completely taken as standard way to do things. If you look in the startup crowd, people who run businesses by themselves are not taken seriously. So people who don't have a founding team will very rarely get investment, will very rarely get into incubators. I mean, I was sort of looking to that world to like, I can't take everything from that world because I don't have the infrastructure in Australia to go through a startup program. I wasn't going to get into one. I didn't have funding or money. But what bits could I take? And one of the things that was very consistent is a lot of these successful businesses are started by more than one person. So that was in my mind. 24/7 thing was in my mind. And it was going to be a long time before I could afford to hire someone. The other thing at the time was that it was really only a couple of weeks, I think, after I started, or maybe a month or two. And there was nothing there. Like there was 20 customers and it was looking good. Like it was looking like this was going to take off and do something. And I thought it would, but it was worth very little. That was the time for me to do that. Like if I was in that situation now and our business, I don't know how much our business is worth, but it would be worth something. And it would be a big decision for me to give half of that to someone else. But if you do it when you start, and you need those skills and you need someone to fulfill that role, then it's a very easy decision to just say, look, I'm just going to go in with someone else on this. And that's what I did.
One of the things I found interesting around Dan's WP Curve story was that he trusted his gut. He knew there were skill sets in that business that needed filling and he knew he wasn't the best person for it. So he found a way to plug the gaps and build a founding team. The last big lesson on his entrepreneurial journey that Dan shared really made me sit up and take notice. He said that right from the start, you have to be prepared to say no to people. Now, this seems the antithesis of what a lot of business owners want to do. So I wonder why.
It does a couple of things. First of all, when you start a business, you know, a lot of people, the first business they start, they don't really actually give any consideration to whether or not this is something they can scale. They give more consideration to like whether or not that customer wants to pay me for something. So, you know, building a website's a good example. I'll go out and say, look, do you want a website? Yeah, I want a website. Cool. I'd like to rank well in Google too. Okay, sweet. No worries. I'll do your SEO. Oh, I'd also like to do paid ads because someone else is bidding against my business name in AdWords. So cool, I'll do AdWords as well. And I really like design. So can you design me a really nice site? And I want to use WordPress, but also want to use Stripe integration. So you'll need to be a programmer. And I've also got an email list. And I'm using Infusionsoft. So I need you to make sure my site has high conversions. And I need you to set up an email autoresponder campaign in Infusionsoft. So I've got email automation and CRM. And you end up saying yes to 55 different things. And even if you charge $5,000 for that project, how much is it going to cost if you exit yourself from that process and hire someone to do every single one of those things. It's going to cost way more than $5,000. So you've just said yes to being unprofitable. And that's what most people do. And so the power of saying no is saying, no, actually, I'm going to design my business around profitability first. So in our case, we're only going to do small 30-minute WordPress jobs. The only type of work we do is the sort of work done by a developer. We don't do design. We don't do SEO. We don't do conversion rate optimization. We don't do email automation. We do the sort of work that can be done by a developer. And because we know exactly what we're going to do, we can reasonably well figure out what our margins are going to be and whether or not we can make a profit. And then we can just focus purely on growing that business and say no to absolutely everything else. And that way we can get to 40 people and $100,000 a month without going out of business because it's fundamentally profitable. Whereas if you say yes to everything, you're just going to get to a point where you run out of time and you can't afford to bring people in to do the work that you want to do. And you're also not going to be known for anything, probably not going to be good at anything either because you haven't focused on anything. I just look at what the top startups do and they all just do one thing. They just do one thing really well. They're known for it to a point where you can easily refer them. You know, people know how to refer WP Curve. If you've got a WordPress problem, then they'll refer us. If you want conversion, if you want email automation, if you want hosting, anything else, they won't refer us because they know we don't do that stuff. And that's, you want to get to the point where people know when to refer you and you can build something profitable as opposed to just saying yes to everything.
There is a great lesson in that for all of us, don't you think? Not trying to be everything to everybody, sticking to your own lane, doing it really well, and possibly the most important thing, building a profitable business around the business you're good at. Like so many entrepreneurs, though, Dan, while still maintaining the highly successful WP Curve, has started out on his latest venture, Black Hops Brewing. So was this a passion project or was it a business that he'd had his eye on for some time?
It's the first. We just are three guys who sat around and talked about making beer. 2 weeks later, we made a first batch. It tasted really good. I got really carried away and started, you know, designing decals and bottles and put up a website. I don't know. It's all a bit of a blur. Like before we knew it, the bloggers were writing about us, like we had a blog and put this content out there. You know, we were planning to build our own brewery. We were getting investors and, you know, and other stuff, just crazy stuff's happened. It's quite amazing the power of getting some attention, getting some traction and just sort of milking that as much as you can. And that's exactly what happened here. So that was about a year ago when we had the very first meeting. Now, like we're just going through a process of trying to get a lease on a building. We just ordered equipment from China and we're hoping to have a physical brewery open by the end of the year.
Like a lot of things in business, timelines don't always match expectations. Looking at the latest blog on their website from the 25th of Feb, their equipment has now arrived from China and is installed. You can follow along with the rest of Dan's brewing story on their website, which I'll link out to in the show notes. It's interesting to me that part of what makes an entrepreneur tick is the need to constantly expand and test our own boundaries of what's possible. While it's a fine line between chasing butterflies, as our resident small business author Andrew Griffiths would say, and actually knowing when you're onto a good thing, for me, what I've figured out is that it makes prudent sense to ensure that one business is up, operational and able to be fully independent of you and your time before you start casting your eyes towards the next big thing. That leads me on to my next guest who described his current life to me.
I mean, these days I just explain that I'm a reformed entrepreneur who spends most of my time, you know, writing books now. And anybody who writes a book will inevitably get invited to come in and give a talk of some sort. So if I'm not on an airplane, you know, going to a conference or a, you know, CEO retreat or something, then I'm happy hiding in my basement, you know, writing books.
You might remember Kevin from our first episode of season two, sharing some amazing productivity hacks with us all. MIT, anyone? Kevin's entrepreneurial journey started for him on a very particular day.
I actually remember the day I decided to become an entrepreneur. And that was when I was about 12 years old and sort of a scary guy showed up at the house looking for my father, who wasn't home that day. And it turns out this guy looking for him was a bill collector looking to collect. And what I hadn't realized is that my father, who had his own small business, had just gone bankrupt. And so people who he owed money to were coming around. You know, that night I asked him, you know, are you going to call this guy? And he said, no. And I said, well, why not? Like, aren't you scared? He says, I'm not scared. He says, there's nothing left for them to take. And literally, I mean, you just sold everything and we lost our house. And within a few weeks after that, moved to another part of town on the other side of the railroad tracks. I wrote in my journal that night, you know, I just said, I don't care what it takes, but when I grow up, I'm going to have a lot of money. And that sounds today as an adult, you say that it's like about greed or, you know, being selfish and wanting materialistic items. But that was just being a 12-year-old saying, you know, I'm never going to have this scary guy show up and throw me out of my house again. So as soon as I graduated from university, I started my first company thinking I had all the answers and I was the smartest guy in the room, and I wasn't. And after a year, I folded up deep in debt. Tried the second company and, you know, that didn't work out, and also deep in debt. And it was the third company that finally took off. But even then, I mean, it took me, you know, about 5 years to build the business to about $1 million in revenue. But I was literally working over 100 hours a week and I was stressed out and I wasn't sleeping and I wasn't eating. And it took me a long time. I then sold that business and did another one that, you know, did even better. Sold that after 5 years, did another one that grew exponentially bigger. And it got to the point where, you know, with some good mentoring along the way, you know, the last business, which I sold, I guess about 6 or 7 years ago now, you know, in the 5 year time period, I grew that to $12 million a year in sales. And I was working less than 40 hours a week. And that's what, when I sold that company, that's when I turned my attention to my second love, which is writing.
I've spoken with a few psychologists over the years, and take from that what you will, but each of them have told me that it is far more powerful to be moving towards a goal rather than be moving away from one. Yet in chatting with some of my guests, the thought of not having enough in whatever shape or form that takes for them has been a powerful driver in their life.
My purpose, what was driving me, was financial independence. And I know a lot of people have that as a goal. And the problem with that is, I mean, it worked. You know, having a goal like that and being so single-mindedly obsessed with it worked in that, you know, I failed once really badly. And instead of just giving up and saying, oh, I don't know how to do this, or I am a failure, or this hurts too much, you know, I just said, well, I just discovered one way not to make $1 million. I'll, you know, lick my wounds, pay off some credit card debt and try again. And when that didn't work out, it would have been easy to say, wow, this is really hard. It, you know, I'm going to go get a regular job. But I didn't, you know, I regrouped and tried again. So I think having a strong purpose is good for all the reasons that now, you know, is covered from Sinek and others. The challenge with it is when it's something that's materialistic, like I had, it worked, but it was painful. I mean, it hurt. It was not fun building those businesses. I felt like I was being chased or that I was chasing something else. It was not a good experience. I think a better purpose to have, a better why, is to really dig deep, you know, and sometimes it takes asking, you know, why 3-4 times to get to that purpose that is something that's going to serve others. You know, I like to say life's really about, you know, making an impact, not an income. And of course, the more impact you make, the more value you provide, the better off you're going to do, the more income or wealth you're going to achieve. And so, you know, I had it wrong. I mean, all of my businesses were, you know, in the spirit of, they were corporate training, corporate education, e-learning type companies. And it would have been much better for me early on to understand that what I'm really doing is educating 1 million people, helping 1 million people to be better in their jobs and in their careers. And I think there's ways to get a powerful purpose that is non-materialistic, just realizing that as you are serving others, the material stuff will come. And I'm sure for a lot of people, they're like, well, easy for you to say, Kevin, you know, you said it worked out for you. But I just see it with some wisdom, you know, some age and some wisdom now, that nothing is more powerful than wanting to make a difference in some way to, you know, as Steve Jobs said, put a dent in the universe.
It was interesting hearing Kevin express that it wasn't until he dug deep and found what was really driving him that he found what his true purpose was. That took the stress and the pressure off him to make his millions and just go about helping people to achieve their goals. It was only then that things started to click into place for him. Now, if you're listening to this and thinking, I really still don't know why I'm doing what I'm doing, then don't stress too much. We are going to be diving into that topic really soon. For now, though, time to meet my next guest. Matthew Paulson is a serial entrepreneur
and from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I own a variety of internet-based businesses. I was a software developer before I became an entrepreneur, so I kind of took a lot of those skills and applied them to online businesses. My main company is called MarketBeat, and that is a digital publishing company in a finance and investing space. And we provide a daily investment newsletter to about 280,000 stock investors every morning.
Like Josh at the start of the show, Matt's journey started out in university too.
So it kind of started when I was in college about 10, 11 years ago now. I was studying for a computer science degree and I just didn't have enough money to pay for tuition. So I needed, you know, a way to make some money. I was a small town of about 7,000 people. So the job opportunities are pretty much McDonald's or Subway or some other crappy fast food job. And I didn't really want to do that, so I thought, hey, maybe I could make some money, you know, doing some freelance writing on different websites. And there was a website called Associated Content that Yahoo bought 6-7 years ago now, but you know, they pay you anywhere from like $7 to $15 for an article. So I would just pound out 7, 8, 9 articles a day. You know, I made a couple grand a month doing that. And eventually, that kind of evolved into I decided to start a personal finance blog, which was called American Consumer News. I did that for 4 or 5 years. I did pretty well. I mean, I made between 50 and 75 grand a year as a blogger. But once the algorithm updates in Google started happening and websites had a lot of content but not a lot of authority started getting hit, mine was one of those got hit. And I just kind of, you know, thought, okay, what are the skills that I've learned that I can apply to the next thing? And I really had figured out how to get traffic for financial news. So I kind of pivoted at that point and moved on to stocks. So I created a financial news website called American Banking and Market News, and eventually that evolved into MarketBeat with email newsletter and all the other things that we do around that.
At first glance, it would appear as though Matt's businesses have no common thread that runs between them all.
I think that the key, I guess, thread that goes between them is all email marketing is a big part of their sales channel, but each kind of evolved differently. We talked a little bit about the story of MarketBeat and how that got started. GoGo Photo Contest was an idea that one of my friends had to help animal shelters raise money, and we'd keep a cut of it, obviously. So he was a pretty decent software developer, but he had no idea how to do the marketing. And I, you know, said, hey, I think email is probably a pretty good channel for this. We decided to partner up. So we found just directories of animal shelters, and we started sending them one-off emails saying, hey, I think we can help you raise money doing this photo contest, because we had proven it locally with the local animal shelters. They raised, you know, 6-7 grand doing it. So we just started taking that and bringing it to other animal shelters. And now we do 200-300 contests a year. That little business makes a couple hundred grand a year. We've raised over $2 million for animal shelters in the last 24 months. So it is a lot of the same programming aspects and email aspects in that. And then US Golf TV happened. It was an introduction. My wife and the gentleman who owns the business, his name's Todd. My wife and his wife both taught together at one of the elementary schools here in town. Their business was struggling, so Todd's wife, Susan, suggested to my wife, Corrine, hey, you should get Matt and Todd together and have them talk. Maybe Matt can help Todd out. They kind of showed me everything they were doing. They had quite a bit of traffic, and they just weren't really monetizing that well, or they weren't doing their email stuff well at all. They didn't even have like AdSense on their website or anything like that. I negotiated, you know, an equity stake in that company, and I think they were doing 70, 80 grand before I got started, and we're going to do probably over 200 this year.
This intrigued me, so I dug a little deeper with Matt to see if when he was at uni, he actually had a career path mapped out for himself, or if he thought he'd end up as a business owner.
So most people that go to the school that I went to, you get a computer science degree, and then you move to the city that's about 50 miles away, and then you get a job being a software developer or a website developer. And I figured that was my career path. I would do that. I'd make $40,000, $50,000 a year, and that'd be my life. So I graduated undergrad in 2008. I stuck around another year to do a master's degree. And then 2009, I took a job with a web design agency like everybody else does. But at the same time, I was also building my business on the side. So 2012 comes around, my day job's paying me like 60 grand a year, and my business is making 200 grand a year. Both of them were, it was pretty sustainable to do both of those things at once. I kept doing them. Then I had our son was born, and I just didn't have time to do both anymore. So I quit my day job, just kind of went full in my business, and revenue has doubled several years in a row now. And I think we're on track to do about $2.5 million in gross revenue this year. So it's really blown up.
Matt is a really unassuming guy when you chat with him. So it amused me to hear of how this highly successful entrepreneur who now invests in other people's businesses just kind of fell into the whole entrepreneur thing. I hope you are hearing a thread in today's conversation. I would almost bet that any one of you listening has had your own twisty, turny road to becoming an entrepreneur. I find it so comforting to know when I'm wondering how a decision is going to pan out that it's probably the same thought that every successful and unsuccessful entrepreneur has ever had.
Enjoying the show? Join us on Twitter at @NABS_podcast and tell us your favorite moment from today's episode.
So there you have it. If you ever catch yourself wondering where this crazy journey of entrepreneurship is taking you, and you're worried about the bills, the tax man, keeping your employees on the roster, have a think back to the guests you've heard today, to their weird and wonderful journeys that led them to success, the failed businesses along the way, the people that have ripped them off, the upbringing that they may have had, and relax in the fact you're in esteemed company. A big thanks to this week's guests: Josh Michio, host of the podcast The Pitch; Dan Norris from 7-Day Startup, WP Curve, and Black Hops Brewing; Kevin Cruz, author of The 15 Secrets Successful People Know About Time Management; Matthew Paulson, serial entrepreneur. As always, though, the biggest thanks goes to you for listening in. Remember, if you enjoyed today's show, share it with your network and consider popping on over to iTunes to leave the show a review. If you want some extracurricular homework, you can pop on over to our Facebook page, Not Another Business Show, and share your entrepreneurial journey with us. Until next week, I'm leaving you with a quote from the world-famous golfer, Arnold Palmer. The road to success is always under construction.
Not Another Business Show is edited and produced by Corporate Podcast Productions. Let your story be heard.